I'm John Batchelor, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, is with me, and we're off to Egypt because it is very difficult to imagine a successful future for the whole of the Middle East, certainly for the Ummah, the Islamic community, without Egypt restored to stability and to what you consider to be trustworthy government. That is not now the case. Mohamed Morsi, the elected president of Egypt, is a partisan towards the Muslim Brothers. Unfortunately, what that means is that persecution of those who are not Muslim Brothers, who are not Islamic, is routine. The anecdotes are everywhere. We welcome Raymond Ibrahim. He's a Middle East and Islam specialist, but he's the Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center, as well as being an associate fellow at the Middle East Forum. And I congratulate him for his new book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. Raymond, a very good evening to you. We spoke recently after Mohamed Morsi this year, this Coptic Christian Easter, chose not to attend the services, though he is president of all the people of Egypt. Is there in Egypt right now any change in this deterioration, any change in this persecution, now that so much attention has been brought to it? Have we gotten into the spring? Have things lightened? A very good evening to you, Raymond.
A very good evening to you, gentlemen. Thanks for having me. To answer your question, yes, there is a change, and it's for the worse. Basically, the oppression, or if you will, the persecution, which is a valid term, of the Christian Copts since the so-called Arab Spring and the Muslim Brotherhood takeover has taken a nosedive. And this is very evident, especially when you consider that it's gone from chaotic persecution, that is, attacking churches, which still happens, for instance, most recently with the St. Mark Cathedral, which was unprecedented since that was actually the holiest site for all Copts and was never attacked during the Mubarak era or earlier. But things have moved from such the chaotic things or the so-called or lawless attacks on Christian Copts to becoming actually institutionalized. And by that, I'm referring to the so-called blasphemy laws, which have been actually making have gotten so many Copts imprisoned at this point. Fox News last week had a report of a Christian teacher, a female Christian teacher in her early 20s, who, because some 10-year-old students, Muslim students, thought that she was, when she was discussing it's a history class, and she was discussing Islam, that she appeared disgusted. And that's what Fox Report quotes. And they reported this to their parents. Their parents made a scene, and now she's awaiting jail time. And even though Fox reported this, the fact is there's probably, since the so-called Arab Spring, another 12 Christian Copts who either are waiting to go to jail or are imprisoned and have gotten more than double the maximum sentence. Maximum sentence is 3 years, and most of them have gotten 6 years. And the reason for that is because during the courtroom trials, mobs, Muslim mobs of 2,000-3,000 people stood outside demanding the death of those Christian Copts for supposedly blaspheming against Muhammad or Islam. So basically, things have gone from just illegal chaos, which, you know, you can say the military or security apparatus turned a blind eye to during the Mubarak era, to actually becoming institutionalized under the guise of the so-called blasphemy laws.
But the Copts are probably the most visible case, but in fact, and your new book points this out, this is something that's not just region-wide. It is a growing percentage of the world where we're seeing this effort at cleansing of Christians, hanging them in Iran to Indonesia, to Mali, hundreds of thousands driven out. How widespread and what will ultimately be the spillover to the Western world, to Europe, to other places?
Well, the spillover, just to touch it real quickly, we just saw recently in London with the beheading. Mm-hmm. Because while the Western world stands in shock at this beheading and are, you know, flabbergasted at seeing such things happen in the West, this is actually a daily occurrence in the Islamic world. And I recount that very vividly in the book, Crucified Again. But as you point out, the point is this isn't just a phenomenon in Egypt. It's not a phenomenon that just happens in the Arab world. It's not localized. It's not based on certain socio-political economic situations. In fact, it's something that's been happening, as I show in Crucified Again, from Morocco in the west to Indonesia in the east to sub-Saharan Africa, all the way down to Uganda, Somalia, Nigeria, Sudan, all the way up north to Turkey, Central Asia, Kazakhstan, and of course, I show this in the book, in Europe. And so what we saw actually was just the most recent example. But the themes of attacks that you'll see in the book. For example, church bombings, church banning churches, killing apostates, that is, Muslims who want to convert to Christianity, killing Christians or imprisoning them, as I was mentioning, for supposedly blaspheming, treating Christian women and children as subhumans that can just be sexually abused or enslaved and killed at will. These things are happening in all those countries and all those regions I mentioned. And so when you read this, you start realizing, well, what is the common denominator? We're talking about countries that span a huge expanse of land, don't share the same race or language, they don't look alike, they don't have the same politics or socioeconomic circumstances as I mentioned. The only thing they have in common is basically large Muslim populations with small Christian minorities around them. And so this is really becoming, in my opinion, the worst human rights crisis in the world, and it's the one that you never heard about.
Why is it that the Human Rights Council at the UN and no other body seems to have any interest in this widespread persecution of a minority?
Well, you know, that's the question right there. And I mean, it's not just the UN, it's Christian churches in America and in Europe and elsewhere. And I have various ideas of why that is. One of them is basically that, the persecution of Christians under Muslims is basically the Achilles heel to Islam's image in the West. Because if Muslims articulate their rage and violence in Islamic terms by screaming, for example, Allahu Akbar, quoting Quranic scriptures or whatever the case may be, and then they attack Israel or they attack the West, even in this recent beheading case, immediately the media is going to focus on one point, which is, well, look, they're minorities, they're ostracized, they're weak, they're the underdog, they're just oppressed, whether it's with Israel, whether it's with the West, and they're lashing out. But when you come to this issue of Christian persecution, these arguments no longer work, because now Muslims are in the majority and Christians are the minority living under their hegemony, and all they want to do is go to church and maintain their Christian identity, and they're being attacked and killed for it. And so how can you use those, you can't use political grievance, you can't use any of these issues that the mainstream media always pulls out to justify the attacks on Israel and the West. And so, of course, when you also look at this, you start connecting the dots, because if it is religious hostility and intolerance, as I pointed out, all around the Islamic world, or in fact, all around the world, wherever there is a significant Muslim presence, then maybe it's not about grievance. Maybe when Israel is attacked, it's in the same context. It's religious hostility or religious supremacism. Maybe that's what's happening with the West also. So I think all of this makes it such that it totally undermines the narrative that the UN and the media and so many other organizations have upheld as so sacrosanct, which is Muslim violence as a product of Muslim grievance.
Raymond, what you're describing is a medieval world. It actually very closely resembles the way Christians were persecuted 300, 500 years ago, especially in the Ottoman Empire. Is that recognizable to the modern states along North Africa, the modern states in the Middle East, that they've gone backwards already in the way they've treated non-Islamic members of their citizenry?
But that's exactly it. When Muslims tell you we want to return back to Islam, or they say Islam is the solution, or Sharia is the way, that is essentially code for saying that attacking Christians, attacking infidels is our way. And I'm glad you actually bring this up, because in my book, Crucified Again, I start off by showing you historical themes, including, as you point out, the Ottoman Empire. So the Ottoman Empire did X, Y, and Z, let's say, to Christians, whether destroying churches, banning churches, enslaving Christians, imprisoning them for blasphemy, killing apostates, and so forth. And then I fast forward to today, and I show you it's the same exact pattern. So nothing's really, this is not an aberration, it's really a continuity of history, and it's coming back in as much as Muslims turn back to Islam, for example, in the slogan, Islam is the solution.
Is it dominant in the governments, or is this the behavior of the culture that the governments tolerate?
It's all of the above. So in some countries, for example, I discuss in the book, Iran, this is an Islamic theocracy, and so this sort of persecution is institutionalized, and you won't actually get a lot of mob action because the government itself is the one that's doing it, specifically by banning churches. Most recently in Iran, they've actually banned using the Farsi language, which is the national language. So now, you know, Christians can't even use that language, lest a Muslim hear it and wish to apostatize. But also it's on the mob level. So wherever you don't have an Islamist government, then the mob itself, because of the culture and the mentality that comes back along with that whole baggage of 1,400 years, is doing the actual work. And a perfect example is in Egypt, as I was pointing out. And when Mubarak was there, it was not an Islamist government, but the mob was actually doing the persecution. Now it's both. Now you got the mob, and now you have the Muslim Brotherhood in charge, and they're institutionalizing a form of persecution, for example, with the blasphemy laws.
Raymond Ibrahim is the author, is a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and he's the author most recently of the new book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batchelor.